Let's talk a little bit just about all the different things that are flying around out there right now in terms of intermittent fasting and keto and carbs are bad. There just seems to be a lot of information that's flying around that really isn't based on science. And it's hard, it's super hard for just the average person to sort through this. It seems like every day in my Instagram
It
feed,
is.
somebody has got something new that they're trying to pitch.
Yes.
In terms of how we can lose weight. Let's start with carbs, though, Emily. There's a very common perception that carbs are bad. You'll hear people in a restaurant, "Oh, I'll have the cheeseburger, but hold the bun." And
Yes.
I'm like, "Wow, that's the best part." But tell so let's talk about carbs first.
Yeah.
What are carbs? What's a good carb? What's a bad carb? How did carbs get such a bad name?
Well, yeah, and carbs are carbohydrates, and they are the primary fuel that our body needs to really ha it, they're our energy fuel. They're a fuel that really gives us the most energy. And they're converted to glucose in our body, and glucose is utilized by the brain so that we can actually do what we're doing right now, think, solve problems, and also for our muscles to burn that fuel to go faster, jump higher. And so carbohydrates are a really preferred fuel by the body because it's a simple fuel that can be burned very easily. There's some capacity to store carbs, but not a lot. So we can store some carbohydrates in our liver to use for energy when we're fasting, like overnight while we're asleep, but not very much there. There's not a lot of storage there. And we can store carbs in our muscle mass to use during our workouts. And exercise training enables us to store more and more, kind of like a battery that you can charge, to store more and more depending on what you're doing physically. And other than that, there's really not the capacity to store much in the way of carbohydrates. So we really need to get it from our diet. And the idea of good versus bad carbs is a little bit murky. We don't really use that philosophy because there's a place for all carbs in the diet, really. If you think of it as a fuel, there's fast acting fuel, there's medium acting fuel, there's slow burning fuel. So if you're only consuming complex carbs throughout the day and high fiber complex carbs, it could make you sluggish. You know, you might need to put some more refined carbs in there to perk up your system. So it varies from person to person and from what task they're trying to accomplish. But there's been carbophobia in our society for actually hundreds of years. So it goes back to the 1700s when the low starch diets first became popular, as far as I could see, although it may have gone back further. That's as far as I could reliably trace it through the scientific literature. But
That's crazy.
yeah,
Hundreds of years. It's kind of like
hundreds.
fashion, you know.
Yeah.
What comes around goes around.
Yes.
But so you can unequivocally say that carbs are not bad. They're absolutely
No.
necessary for good health.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, whole grains are in the carbohydrate family, and whole grains help prevent cancer, heart disease, obesity, diabetes. So these are foods that are rich in nutrients and really important for us.
Let's talk about fasting. This intermittent fasting has become really, really, in vogue right now, because I think it works for a while for some people, right? And they have dramatic results. But I don't understand what's happening. I mean, from a scientific
Yeah.
standpoint, can you explain
Well,
how
this is,
fasting affects the body?
yeah, and this is another one. So the low starch diets date back to the 1700s and intermittent fasting to the 1800s. So it first started in, I believe it's 1840. And as a, you know, a dietary strategy, but that's why you can find science that backs it up. But as you said, it's short-term data. It's really focused on short-term data. And you can, no matter what the diet is, you can force your body to respond in the short term, unless you've done this numerous times, and then it might go on strike. But it's really what happens over the long term. And what we see is, no matter what type of diet it is, we see weight regain and often ending up higher than the starting weight that the person started with. But prolonged periods of fasting, what they can do is they can really suppress hormones that are those beneficial positive signals that say we're secure, we have enough food supply, we weigh enough. So hormones such as, you may have heard of leptin, which is a hormone from the body fat that's important. But prolonged fasting can suppress those hormone signals and start to trick the brain into thinking that you're actually in a real famine. And that's the concern. And at the same time, that prolonged fasting can jack up other negative signals. You may have heard of ghrelin, which is a hormone from the stomach, nicknamed the hunger hormone. But it's a hormone that tells the body and the brain that we're too hungry, we're too hungry. And even if you don't feel hungry, those chemical signals are happening. So once the brain starts to catch on to this, then it goes into its mode of protecting you from famine. And so it sends these signals back that really impair your energy expenditure rates, your metabolic rate, to slow it down. And at the same time, it can actually really increase your appetite and suppress your sense of fullness as well once it starts to fight back. This is often referred to as the biologic weight defense or biologic adaptation or metabolic adaptation that occurs after any type of restricting food groups or calories or, you know, prolonged periods of fasting or just even not fueling your exercise.
Wow. It, you know, this whole depriving of calories or fasting makes me think of, you know, I'm guessing a lot of your patients maybe dieted as teenagers to fit into that prom dress or to fit into those, you know, that baseball uniform or whatever. But tell me what, you know, tell me what you've seen in terms of your patients when it comes to dieting and the damage that that does, the permanent damage that that does.
You know, Mark, it can also be generational. So you can have generations of dieters. And it's not just the moms, because the father's metabolic condition at the time of conception also affects the genes they pass to the to their child. So looking back at the family history and the values in the family going back, I have actually seen people who are, you know, related to Holocaust survivors or people who've just had a lot of dieting in the family from generation to generation. And that, I think, does also amplify our own genetic problems and cause even more trouble going back. But just in our own lifetimes, unfortunately, the research actually shows that even with 1 8-week diet of the type that doctors prescribe, what's called the medically supervised diets, even after just 8 weeks of that, 1 year later, those metabolic hormones have not recovered, the ones that have suppressed. And they, you know, the beneficial ones can suppress quite a bit, anywhere from 25 to 40% of their level pre-diet. And then you look at it a year later and it's not returned anywhere near normal. So it can create a lasting imprint of famine within the body that's very hard to fight. And that's what people experience.
And the more times you diet, does it get more pronounced?
Yes, absolutely it does. And that's why we try to catch people, children and adolescents, and educate parents about, let's not, you know, they're athletic. We need to make sure they're fueling enough. They don't need to be on a diet just because their BMI is elevated. So we try to break that diet cycle so that now that child will grow up without that metabolic damage, diet damage, then they won't pass it to their offspring eventually.
Wow. I don't think the average person, Emily, realizes how dangerous dieting is to, I mean, if we're especially doing it to our kids and depriving them of calories, that we could be setting them up for a lifetime of struggle, you know, when it comes to their metabolism, right?
Yes. And it's not just what we put them through, but they've done studies that show that the diet mentality in the household and focus on body image and dissatisfaction with body image also affects the children, even if they're not dieting.
Wow.
It affects their metabolism. And So it's very fascinating, but we're meant to live in communities and groups and be aware of potential famine in the environment. And there are kind of subtle communications that take place that influence, in the collective level, that influence us individually.